This weekend starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Where mass shooters are saints. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Gunmen who cause the most death and destruction with a racial motive are often celebrated in the dark corners of the internet.
In this red-hot job market, it actually takes quite an effort to get fired. Hear what hiring managers are saying.
A heartwarming reunion for a little boy in Georgia who had a very important person to thank following his graduation from kindergarten.
And how to rediscover your adventurous side.
You know, you don't have to climb El Capitan. You don't have to free solo El Capitan to be adventurous. You know, it could be anything. You could try a new restaurant or a new neighborhood or, you know, just a new sport or a new activity.
Elizabeth Bernstein at the Wall Street Journal on reclaiming your sense of adventure. Well, shooters who have caused the most death and destruction with a racial motive are celebrated online in images and messages depicting them as saints. Experts worry teenagers online may be susceptible to the imagery. Will Carlis, national reporter covering extremism for USA Today, has been looking into it. Will, what have you uncovered?
So this is something I've been saying for years, and you know, it's no surprise to experts in extremism, but I think it's pretty shocking to most people, is that these shooters, particularly racist mass shooters who have gone out and committed these atrocities, far from being, I mean, obviously they are reviled and hated in many parts of the internet, but in other parts of the internet, they're actually really kind of held up as aspirational figures, and are actually this trend that has come out where they're given the title either brother or saint, and saint is specifically for people who kill the most people and have what these hateful groups consider to be the most sort of successful mission, successful being that they've killed the most people. So yeah, in the hours after this attack, the Buffalo shooter was already being referred to as Saint Gendron, and yeah, pretty dark stuff.
Jeez. Okay, so it sounds like a great idea, right? Just shut this stuff down. Just cancel those memes on the internet. But it doesn't work that way, yeah. Right? They would just resurface somewhere else.
Well, firstly, I mean, you know, there's nothing illegal about calling a mass shooter a saint or, you know, worshipping a mass shooter in a way. I mean, that falls within the First Amendment, right? Yeah. I mean, so there's nothing, this is legal speech. And so law enforcement can't do anything about it. Now, what they can do is they can say, if someone starts saying, you know, I'm going to be the next saint or I'm going to go and target this specific place, if there's a specific threat, then law enforcement can do something about it. But as far as shutting it down and censoring it, I mean, it's just not going to happen. Wherever you shut these people down, they will show up somewhere else. Yeah. The internet has always got a darker corner that people can go to and, you know, and meet each other in, and they'll always find their way there. You can clamp down on the sort of the big megaphones. You can stop these people from posting on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and those companies are, you know, hard at work trying to shut down this kind of hate speech, but they'll always crop up somewhere or other.
Right. We're speaking with Will Carlis. Excuse me. We're speaking with Will Carlis, national correspondent covering extremism for USA Today. He's written a piece called Online, Extremists Turn Shooters into Saints. I read something the other day, too, where somebody was making the case that you can pin this on people being racists or anti-Semites, things like that. But because there were signs ahead of time, we're ignoring these larger mental health problems that it seems a lot of these folks have. What about on that front, Will?
I mean, I think that's fair. I think that's true. I don't think anybody goes and kills large numbers of people who doesn't have mental health issues, no matter how much they proclaim to be, you know, sane and normal, as indeed this guy did in his online writings. I mean, you know, I live in California, and I mean, you only have to take one step into any major American city to see that we have a huge mental health crisis in this country, and that, you know, that people with serious mental health issues are not getting the help that they need, you know. Of course, what I hate about this kind of connection is that it does stigmatize, you know, people with mental health. The vast majority of people with mental health issues, you know, don't commit atrocities yeah. like this, right? I mean, these people are, you know, they're very hateful, very, you know, very, very evil people. And so they have a combination of, a fatal combination of having these hateful viewpoints and having the sort of ability to shut out the mental health protections that would stop most of us from going and doing something like this.
These images of mass killers as saints, who's the target community?
Teenagers, young teenagers, middle school kids. You know, this is a long-running trait of the white supremacist community, which is that you hook them young and you get them with edgy humor, because this is supposed to be humor. I mean, this is supposed to be edginess. And that, the whole idea is that if you can sort of be the most edgy and the most out there, then that's attractive to a certain group of teenagers who are rebelling and who are in this kind of headspace where everything their parents do is wrong and everything their teachers do is wrong. And so they gravitate towards the most extreme version on the other side.
Thanks, Will. Will Carlis, national reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, avoiding mental health issues at work. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Summer Sale Event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Take the lead with Windows 10 Pro devices. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Summer Sale Event. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. According to a new poll from Fast Company and Harris, employees are still afraid to discuss mental health at work. The survey found 47% said their job had negatively impacted their mental health. In addition, 43% said that their mental health negatively impacted their job performance. In-depth analysis from Lee Richardson, licensed counselor and founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. Lee, how do you see it?
Well, you know, Gordon, the way I see it is employees are still trying to be ensured that they're going to be able to have a hybrid work schedule, that they're going to be able to work from home as much as they want to. And a lot of corporations have taken a stance and said, yes, we'll do it, but a lot haven't. And I think that that's playing into some people's security. They've learned that they can work very effectively from home. They've learned that their stress is much level. They don't have commute time. They don't have to worry about elder care or child care as much. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of stress going on that's creating more mental health issues, and they don't feel secure that they in their work environment at this point.
Boy, when you say there are more mental health issues possibly developing, it makes me think, first, we don't know how to talk about it. And then on top of that, we may be falling further behind if we're developing more issues, no?
You're right. And when I say it, more issues, it all comes from uncertainty. And until we get more certain, there's still a lot of people, Gordon, that are very concerned about the virus. And there's still a lot of people that are very concerned about how they will be able, if they will be able to move forward. I see those at the Brain Performance Center. And I think that we need to stabilize, and once we stabilize, then we can start to feel comfortable talking about things. And it's hard. It's easy to talk about you know, about the basketball game that's going to go on tonight, or your kids. But it's hard to talk about your mental health.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about the fact that you don't get any sleep at night because you lay there and you toss and turn and you ruminate. You've got those thoughts going over and over in your head.
You were saying something that made me think of this, and I don't know what it was, but it made me wonder, what about the age of some of today's managers? You know, some of us were brought up ignoring mental health issues, right? Like, suck it up or get over yourself, you know, was the phrase that was used. Is that possibly at play here? Like, that we don't understand maybe how to recognize if somebody's having an issue or how to encourage somebody to talk about it?
Absolutely, Gordon. I think you bring up a really valid point. And, you know, for so long, it has not been okay to not be okay. And how do we make that shift? How do we just kind of, it comes with education, and it comes with putting some energy into understanding mental health to reduce that stigma. But, you know, if there's not a reason to do it, why do it?
Sure. We're speaking with Lee Richardson, licensed professional counselor, also founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. And we're talking about employees afraid to discuss mental health at work. And I think, too, it's been pointed out there are just not enough mental health resources on the job. What would enough, I guess, look like, Lee?
Well, that's a really good question. I think enough has more to do with how they're communicated than how many there are. Because I know a lot of companies have EAP programs, but their when I talk with my clients, I'm like, "Well, does your company have an EAP program?" Huh?
What does that mean? What's EAP?
Yeah, that's Employee Assistance Program.
Okay.
So that they do have some benefits set up for mental health. But if it's not communicated and your employees may even know it exists, but they don't know how to access it, it doesn't do very much good. So, you know, my suggestion would be, let's put the emphasis on how we communicate the resources that are out there.
Is it possible that a mental health issue can become a self-fulfilling prophecy at times?
Absolutely. I honestly believe that, because I believe that if you get up and you tell yourself, you know, or you pay attention to your body and you're nauseous and you feel, you know, a little bit dizzy, and you feel, because with mental health issues, you have physical health issues at the same time, Gordon.
Yeah.
And if you just pay attention to those physical health issues, I mean, that brain kicks in. You don't need to go to work today. You need to take care of your body. And the kicker is, when it's all in your brain and your mind, that same message does not kick in.
Thanks, Lee. Lee Richardson, licensed counselor, and again, founder of the Brain Performance Center. Coming up next, how to reclaim some adventure in your life. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. For much of the past 2 years, we were buried in bad news, right? Trudging along, just hoping to survive. We spent so much cognitive energy trying to stay safe and keep up with events that we had little left to pursue the types of exciting adventures that expand our lives. Now it's time to push ourselves outside of our comfort zone. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Missing out on excitement? It's time to be adventurous again. Here with some tips is Elizabeth Bernstein of the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, are we starting to come out of the mental lows of the pandemic?
we're trying. And I think what many people are finding is even as the world is starting to open up a little, we're sort of stuck with this inertia. Things that we would have done before take so much more effort. And I myself, even, I feel like I was an adventurous person before. If I can get myself out the door, it's a good day. So I feel like we are really struggling with this. We want to go out there. We want to live big again. And I'm not talking about anything COVID related. Still take precautions if you need to. But just in terms of the general adventures we used to have that made us feel better, they're harder now.
What are the benefits of doing something new?
Huge benefits. That's why I wrote this column. There's huge benefits in novelty. Novelty, doing something new, it activates your dopamine system, and this enhances mood, it enhances your positive outlook, and then research shows that may also make you more creative, more motivated, and better able to adjust to stress. So doing something new right now is really the antidote to this inertia.
Elizabeth, I know you spoke to some people for your story about some things that they were trying. What were some of those new things?
It were interesting things. You know, you don't have to climb El Capitan. You don't have to free solo El Capitan to be adventurous. You know, it could be anything. You could try a new restaurant or a new neighborhood or, you know, just a new sport or a new activity. There's all sorts of ways to take a walk in a different area than you usually do. There's all sorts of ways to hit this novelty sort of thing and also to be adventurous. So I talked to people who were doing the big things, you know, hiking out there. You know, one woman, though, I loved this that I did write about, a young woman. She chose an open mic night. So she's a classically trained pianist, and she supports herself right now as a piano teacher. But she said, you know, I always wanted to be a singer-songwriter, and I'm going to write some songs, and I'm going to go out there, and it terrifies me, but I'm going to do this open mic night. And another thing about adventure, it's not just the novelty that's good for you. Overcoming your fear is good for you. There's all sorts of research on fear. And when we face our fear, that also boosts our mood. So doing anything even a little dangerous, even say a roller coaster, that makes us less stressed, less tired, and even euphoric when we face fear and overcome it.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein of the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, what if you try something new and it doesn't go that well? Will that kind of backfire on your mental health plans?
Well, if you beat yourself up about it, it will. You know, if you tell yourself, I'm such an idiot, I never should have done that, I didn't manage to, you know, finish my hike, it was only a mile. You know, if you really beat yourself up, it won't. But if you take the attitude like, hey, I got out there, I tried this, you know, good for me, pat myself on the back, like I did it. Years ago, I interviewed somebody who tried to go hiking on, you know, out in some mountain on some cliff with some friends to get over a breakup. And he was terrified and clinging to the side of the mountain at all times. And so he said, it didn't go well. It always stuck with me. He said, that didn't go well, the hike, but I got out there and I'm really proud of myself for trying. And so that's the attitude you have to say. You're trying, you're going to do something, you're going to attempt it, proud of yourself for trying.
Why is it important to start small?
Start small, again, because I was saying earlier, it really is, many of our adventures that we might choose right now or feel that we're sort of emotionally and physically capable of may look different than the ones we chose before. So, you know, we might not be doing as adventurous things. So start small. And this is it. Like if you're not going to choose something big now because you're not ready for it, just pick a manageable activity you can do soon, say this weekend close to home. And this breaks your inertia. You're going to build your confidence and then you can ramp up to something bigger.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal columnist Elizabeth Bernstein. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka coming up this half hour. Questions for your financial advisor in this stock market period. Also, how getting fired takes hard work these days. And the deputy who saved a drowning 2-year-old has a heartwarming reunion
at his kindergarten graduation. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, the shocks of high gasoline costs are ricocheting through the economy, and industry analysts see little relief on the horizon. Manufacturers are wrestling with the cost of plastic packaging, which is made from the same crude oil in high demand for gasoline. Even boaters are weighing whether they should delay putting their vessels in the water now that filling their tanks can run hundreds of dollars more. Insight from Evan Halper, business reporter at The Washington Post. Evan, what's up here?
Well, we looked at how the prices just keep going up and up and up. I mean, we're well north of $4 a gallon now. We're climbing towards $5 in a lot of the country, and obviously in California, we've already passed that. Yet the demand is not going down, and so that's created a complicated situation. You know, if demand doesn't come down with these high prices, it just keeps pushing the prices higher and higher, you know, as supply is short. And there's a number of reasons demand's not coming down. You know, a big one of them is we've all been bottled up in the pandemic. You know, people had were looking at this summer being the summer of reopening, and they want to travel. And because we've all been staying home with the pandemic during the pandemic and not spending as much money, you know, people have more savings than, you know, historically Americans have ever had. And so they have that money to absorb the higher gas prices, but supply is short. And so it just sort of, you know, creates this spiral where it keeps pushing prices upward because people are paying them.
Yeah. Explain what you touched on here, the about the anxiety for retailers and trucking companies.
Yeah, sure. I mean, because supply is so short, I mean, there's really concern, you know, a couple of things. One, that, you know, prices just keep going up and up, and it just drives the prices up of things that, you know, retailers are shipping or manufacturing, because gas prices, you know, they affect not just us at the pump, but they affect everything else. You know, I mean, if you buy any product, it's, you know, probably getting shipped by a truck at some point, and maybe it's also, you know, you're buying from Amazon, you know, there's a delivery truck, too, that's bringing it to your house. You know, there's fuel surcharges getting tacked on to all manner of products. We, you know, talked to school administrators in Davenport, Iowa, you know, where they have a fresh fruit delivery program paid for by the federal government, but the delivery surcharges got to be so much that they had to cancel it early because they just didn't have money in their budget for it. And then, you know, the cost of bread getting delivered to the school district also was, you know, they were looking at 20% fuel surcharges, and then ultimately the baker just said he can't afford to keep delivering to schools because the fuel is so expensive. They had to find another supplier. The costs doubled. They're getting less bread. You're seeing, you know, all kinds of situations like this. There's also potential for a shortage of diesel fuel over the summer because that's, you know, an area where there's just a real acute shortage. You know, and you're seeing truck stops in some parts of the country warning truck drivers that, you know, they're trying to manage, balance their supplies, but they may need to ration in certain areas. Jeez. And, you know, obviously, if you're a truck driver, you're driving coast to coast, that's a source of real anxiety. You know, if you have to worry about the, you may not even be able to fill up your tank, or if you can, what it's going to cost you.
Right. Wow. We're speaking with Evan Halper, business reporter at The Washington Post. His story is called "Even as Gas Prices Rattle Economy, Americans Can't Stay Off the Road." How is, you touched on this a little bit. How is it different, this particular spike in gas prices, to that of 2008?
So in 2008, that was, you know, heading into the Great Recession, and we were on kind of a spending frenzy as a country. You know, we had never had such a low savings rate. And so when gas prices went up and the economy started to sour, you know, people just couldn't afford it. And they started making decisions, you know, staying off the road as much as they could. That lowered demand, you know, and that was one of the reasons that spike in gas prices, you know, and they were more expensive then when you adjust for inflation than they are even now. But it wasn't this kind of prolonged period. I mean, we've been in this for months already. All analysts seem to expect that we're going to be in this, you know, many months more with these high gas prices. At that time, you know, the prices shot up and then they came back down.
Thanks, Evan. Evan Halper, business reporter at The Washington Post. Coming up next, some questions today for your financial advisor. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Summer Sale Event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Take the lead with Windows 10 Pro devices. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's summer sale event. Hey, thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Final weekend of May. First, consider this general guide on investing. Financial advisors say it's about playing the long game instead of hyperventilating over headlines and doing something drastic. Now, file that statement under things easier said than done. Questions you should be asking in this particular stock market from Andrew Keschner, reporter at MarketWatch. Andy, set the scene.
I was just sort of brainstorming on the question that would go through a person's mind at a moment like this. And one of them is, my money's in index funds, so what if I just kept them in index funds? And because many advisors say this is really over the long haul, the best way to go, low costs, you'll just track the market, and in the end, you'll be rewarded, but you've got to have that patience. And so people said, in this intermediate moment, it's going to be bumpy. It's going to continue to go down, but that's always kind of like the safe default way to go. I mean, some indexes are built differently than others, and some are more like the way they're kind of structured, more exposed to tech, for example, like the S&P or a NASDAQ. So those are things you need to take into consideration as well.
Yeah. So I think generally speaking, right, you're considered a long-term investor if you're 5 years or more away from retirement. But what about those folks who are there now, just got there or maybe a year or two away?
I think for them, one possibility is bonds and fixed income. It's not, you're not going to get any eye-popping returns, but some advisors say that it will kind of give you a little bit of a buffer on the downside a bit. One thing to take in mind with bonds is there's this thing called interest rate risk, where if you have a bond for a long amount of time at a certain interest rate, and in this rising rate environment, other bonds are going to come in with higher rates, and that's going to push your bond prices down. So that's why they say short durations would be best if you're looking into bonds at this moment.
We're speaking with Andrew Keschner, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. He's written a piece that's called Ask Your Financial Advisor These Questions Before Reacting to Stock Market Volatility. A lot of it comes down to, as you point out in the story, your personal risk for appetite. But what about these other person-by-person variables?
Yeah, one of the things you mentioned, I mean, how much time do I have before I need to make some major money decision in my life, like a planned purchase of a house, or the big kahuna, retirement. Those are all the things that people need to be taking into consideration. Another one is, how much time am I willing to put into research if I want to do what's called buying the dip, where you think you know where the bottom is and it's all north from here. If you do that, people say come with it with an ounce of humility, because there could be further dips to go, and the market keeps proving that again and again.
Thanks, Andy. Andrew Keschner, reporter at MarketWatch. Coming up next, the effort it takes to actually get fired in this job market. High interest debt can put you into a financial hole, and a lot of people are too embarrassed to ask for help. That's where Upstart comes in. Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date, whether it's for paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses. You can even receive funds in as fast as one business day, from $1,000 to $50,000. And checking your rate at Upstart has to be the easiest process ever invented. The questions are simple, the drop-down boxes are user-friendly, and the application took less than 5 minutes. In addition, all your responses are encrypted and do not affect your credit score, so you have complete security and privacy. Don't wait. Check your rate today at Upstart.com. upstart.com/Gordon. That's upstart.com/Gordon to check your rate today. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Again, upstart.com/Gordon. Hey, thanks for being with us. Some jobs have always required little more than the ability to stay awake. In the tightest labor market in a half century, people in higher functions may get by just by going through the motions too. But Callum Borchers, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, says to hold down a job these days, a worker seemingly needs one essential trait, and that's a pulse. Cal, your take.
Well, you know, I was thinking about sort of the flip side of this great resignation, Gordon, right? There's so many people leaving their jobs voluntarily. I kind of figured, well, you know, who's getting pushed out involuntarily? So I checked the labor statistics, and it turns out hardly anybody. I mean, it's a fraction of 1% that are getting laid off or dismissed every month. And then you sort of call people up and say, well, what's going on? And basically, they're so worried about recruiting. There's no chance that you're going to find somebody who, or no guarantee, you're going to find somebody better to replace an underperformer. So unless you have somebody who is truly just dragging down the business and you just have to cut bait, you're going to sort of deal with the person who's kind of, you know, humdrum, because that might be the best you can do at the moment.
So to that point, you talked about this software company, UKG, and they said they're willing to rehire some former middling managers.
Yeah, they said this is very common. This is like an HR software company, and they polled something like 2,000 managers, and almost two-thirds of them said, yeah, we'd be willing to take back, you know, middling former employees. And 16% of them, Gordon, said they'd be willing to hire back anybody, regardless of skill level. I mean, they're so desperate to get bodies, some companies. I mean, that's something like one in six, one in seven. That's a pretty big number.
And so part of that, though, I guess, for the committed company would mean training and perhaps retraining.
Yes, and so that's what I'm hearing from the Society for Human Resource Management, which is that companies are really committing to investing, retraining their employees. You might just say, okay, well, we're not going to terminate this person, but we're going to move them to a different job function. Let's hope they can be decent at something else. And maybe in the past, you would have just canned them. And that may be a good thing in the long run. In other words, that you got workers who and some of them actually may not just be slacking off on purpose. Some of them may just be in the wrong kind of role. I was thinking about the sports analogy. I was comparing managers to like Bill Belichick, right? Because I'm a New England guy. So I'm thinking about the way, you know, Bill has turned these players who they come in for one position. Julian Edelman, right, comes in as a quarterback.
Yeah.
It turns him into a great wide receiver. Sometimes that can work in business, too.
I'm speaking with Callum Borchers, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called In This Economy, Getting Fired Takes Hard Work. I chuckled, too, at the one guy I talked to who was trying to calculate how to figure out how bad you can be at your job.
Yeah, I love this. Leave it to the business school professors to help us do the math on this. This is Ben Friedrich, who teaches at Northwestern. And he said, you know, you basically have to think about, like, how important is what you do to the company's bottom line? But actually, there's an ironic twist to this, which is you might think by that he means, oh, if you're really important, you're hard to push out the door. No, it's actually the reverse. I heard from multiple HR specialists who said it's actually the people in the highest job functions who are in the riskiest position right now, because their failures are just so costly for a business that even in a tight labor market, they might be the ones to get fired because you just can't deal with them. But if you're not that important to the business, you know, you're just kind of like a rank and file worker, well, you probably aren't going to inflict a whole lot of damage by not doing so great at your job. So you may just be shuffled off into some other function, but you're going to keep that paycheck.
Part of the risk, as you pointed out in your story, is that putting up with somebody or people who are subpar could drive away the good employees.
Yeah, I mean, the short-term calculus makes sense, right? You're concerned about recruiting, so you hang on to people you already have. But what happens if you're not able to adequately reward your high performers? I was thinking about Wall Street as a good example because they were paying out huge bonuses last year, gangbusters year on Wall Street. Well, so far, not so good this year, right? The Dow is down double digits so far in 2022. So those bonuses for the top performers may not be there. And for that matter, the promotion pool may be smaller as well. So you might have the situation, just to pick that an example sector where, you know, the highest performers don't get much of a reward, but the low performers aren't getting fired. Everybody's kind of treated in the middle. And I spoke with this this woman named Jessie Wisdom, who runs a company that helps other businesses motivate their workforces. And she said, you know, this kind of situation is really demotivating. If you're a high achiever, you might be wondering, why do I have to put in so much effort right now? What's the point?
Thanks, Cal. Callum Borchers, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, a reunion for a kindergarten graduate.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
We'll finish with this. A little boy named Hunter Long has graduated from kindergarten in Cherokee County, Georgia, but reuniting with the deputy who saved his life made the milestone more special. Hunter was just 2 years old when he nearly drowned. WSB Television says a man named Detective Duncan, who at the time was a deputy with the county sheriff's office, responded to the call. He pulled little Hunter from the pool and performed CPR. The child began to breathe again and made a full recovery. Hunter graduated kindergarten last week from Little River Elementary School north of Atlanta. His family brought him by the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office to celebrate with Detective Duncan. Hunter walked up to the officer, gave him a big hug. He also showed off his diploma. His kindergarten profile, by the way, says Hunter's favorite movie is Spider-Man, favorite book, Cat in the Hat, favorite food, macaroni and cheese, and what he wants to be when he grows up, a police officer. The sheriff's office said it's a reminder of why they do what they do. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.